Chris Landry at 7:30. We'll talk football all over the place, both college and NFL. Kadri Ishmael, former receiver for the Baltimore Ravens, current broadcaster for the Baltimore Ravens. We'll talk about the matchup with the Oakland Raiders. Don't forget, 8:30, Wheel of Kings. You'll have an opportunity to write down another king as we get closer to the open of Golden One Center. As a matter of fact, the ribbon cutting is today.
I totally forgot about it. This morning.
Yeah, ceremony downtown. Commissioner Stern, former Commissioner David Stern, will be there in attendance, being that, you know, they're naming a street after him. And also, there's that. And Nostradam has to finish out the show. Your pick four today, by the way, and feel free to call in and get your picks in. Niners, Cowboys, Raiders, Ravens, Seahawks, Jets, Saints, Chargers. Get all four. You could win prizes.
You got to make sure that you give a
tiebreaker
score on the final game.
Here's what you missed in the first hour. I don't know why you'd want to, but KSUK.com will have that podcast along with the next 2 hours coming up here just a few hours after we get off the air. We had a conversation as we broke. We're talking about Richard Sherman's comments about how the NFL doesn't care. And just to be clear, listen, I'm certainly not okay with NFL players walking around like they're drunk after they play with all the head injuries and everything goes on. It's definitely something that needs to be worked on. My point is, I don't just blame the NFL, and I think blaming the NFL is an easy and convenient and incorrect conclusion. I think the players, and most importantly, the Players Association, has a huge amount of blame to go in. And I'm not just going to sit here every time a player comes out and says, the NFL doesn't care about us. Well, no S, Sherlock. It's a business. Shut up. Get your union together and figure it out.
Yes, they have to help themselves out. But you were saying that you feel, okay, we can't say that the NFL hasn't done things to change
yes.
it. They've instituted all these rules, so
yes.
on and so forth. But my point there, Dave, is how much of what the NFL has done to address player safety has actually been to change it and make it better, and how much of it has been a PR stunt? Because when you look at it,
does it matter?
The same thing with the fact that, you know, the article came out yesterday about, oh, they're trying to hire more women, both officials, scouts, people, executives, but yet they're going to punish guys for smoking pot and give them a bigger suspension than they do guys that beat their wives and their girlfriends.
That's true. But
so really all they do in my – I'm trying to wrap my head around this and say how much of what they're actually doing is to make a difference and make a change for the better, and how much of it is to cover up their horrible, horrible things that they allow to happen.
That's probably 100% covering up. So what? It's changed.
Well, if you're not,
it's not
necessarily.
I mean, it's better.
It's aesthetic change.
Let me ask you something.
You think football is any safer than it was
yes.
30 years ago?
Yes.
Why?
Yes. Well, I don't know. Let's go with helmet technology, number one. Let's go with penalties
there's
on hits
no,
to the head, number two.
There's nothing that – it doesn't matter if
there's
it's
no
a direct
medical research
blow to
because
the hair
wait,
to the
what?
Head. It doesn't matter if it's a direct blow
it
to the head.
It doesn't matter if there's a direct blow to the head?
No, because, dude, if you are running 20 miles an hour and you are 250 pounds and you run into another guy that's bigger than you going the same speed, doesn't matter if he hits you in the chest or in the head, you're going to be concussed.
Why do they wear helmets?
Got me, dude.
So they just shouldn't wear helmets? I feel like that's not
a
good medical opinion.
That probably would make it safer, frankly.
That's actually an interesting conversation I think we've had
as
before.
Weapons.
The NFL, here's what I will say. I believe the NFL has done more for player safety in the last 10 years than the players have. I believe the NFL has done more for player safety in the last 10 years than the players have done for themselves. Because guess what? Players are still out there getting stronger. Players are still out there taking steroids. Players are still out there hitting each other in the head. And players are still out there not holding their union accountable to tell the NFL to get it done.
But that's the problem. Boys. You're making the owner's argument. And that's where I have an issue with this. Like, you're on one side or the other.
I'm not.
And
it's
I'm
not true.
Never going to be siding with the owners.
I'm not siding with the owners.
But you just made their argument.
I did make their argument.
You're on the side of the owners.
I can make a player. No. Why?
Because
you can't sit there and look at both sides and go, you know what? The owners have issues. The owners are greedy, fat pigs. At the exact same time I said that, the players need to do more for themselves. And every time a player comes out and goes, concussions, which is a huge deal. Guess what? Organize your union. Go on a real strike. Get guaranteed contracts. follow it baseball yeah, and yeah. basketball. What do you mean?
Up by your bootstraps. Like, are you? That's not even what Richard Sherman was saying.
Look at what baseball and basketball have done for themselves.
Well, boys, boys.
That's fine.
Let each other talk.
What? Well, no.
Yes.
No, that's not the way
what Richard Sherman was saying. And now, thanks, Katie, for friggin' sidetracking this whole thing.
I'm sorry. I was trying to allow you to have a moment to get your point out.
He was mainly yelling at me.
Yeah. No, I mean, what Richard Sherman was saying is not that he thinks that concussions are bad and the NFL needs to legislate them out. What I hear him saying is that, dude, you guys can do more. You're capable of it. You have the money. We shouldn't have to go on strike. If you guys say you care, which this is what you're doing with all this if you say you care, put your money where your mouth is. Stop suppressing concussion research. Actually do something about it other than just making a rule that pretty much makes fans miserable and players miserable, and that's about it.
I would say that's fair what you said. I would say
don't do that.
No, I would say that's very fair to what you said. My retort to that would be, Richard, this is the real world, pal. It's a business. They don't care about you. And guess what? Santa Claus may or may not be real. So why don't you and your friends figure it out? The only way the NFL is going to move is if you make them move.
So, but that's, I think his whole point is that, like, why don't they just say, hey, we're a business, man. We don't give a damn.
Because it's not good PR.
Great. That's his whole point.
Then that's a stupid point, because the NFL's not going to say that, because they are a business and they are in the business of PR and they're in the business of making money using these players to help them do it. So, Richard, stop trying to ask them to be nice and get her done.
Go to hell.
We'll take a break. We got four down
Tori
on the drive. Sports 1140 KHDK.
Guys, sorry to put a pause on the Richard Sherman conversation because it's a good one, but it's four down territory time. And on first down, Josh Gordon is going to rehab. He was preparing to return this week. Question is, why now?
You know, I can actually tie this back into that conversation. And guess what? I think Nate and I are going to be on the same page here. It is criminal. It is absolutely criminal to use probably a word that doesn't belong here. That you can, you know, hey, you know what? Beat your girlfriend. You're out for two games, maybe three. That's fine. You get caught with coke, this, that. But you smoke a joint. Now you got to go. What? I mean, I don't want to make. I'm certainly not making fun of addiction, and I'm certainly not poking fun at drug use. But I mean, what is marijuana rehab, anyways, dude? It's marijuana. How many more freaking studies do you need to see that marijuana, at worst, is as damaging as alcohol? At worst.
I don't know that this is just a marijuana thing. We don't have all the facts. We know what he was nailed for. We don't know what else is going on in his life. There's a lot of other things going on.
He had a warrant out for a paternity test.
Yes.
I know that.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. So let's go to rehab for that.
You can't
it's called
rehab
a condom, Dave. But anyway, the point here is what I don't understand.
Deadbeat dad rehab.
He knew he had a four-game suspension.
Yes.
He was there during the preseason. Why do you go now? When your four-game suspension is up, is it because your team is so bad? No, you should have gone a couple months ago. Go in. It's an inpatient. They're like 28 days usually. So to me, this is the most bizarre thing. Yes, I advocate for him to go ahead and take care of whatever issues are going on in his life. But now, why didn't you do it earlier?
Well, and to me, that one's real simple. He didn't do it earlier because he wasn't ready. I mean, that's kind of where I fall on this. He's going now because this is when he's ready to do it, and that's the time to start rehab when you have addiction issues.
That's Navarro Bowman of the San Francisco 49ers talking about the Dallas Cowboys rookie running back Ezekiel Elliott. How will the Niners beat the Dallas Cowboys this weekend?
Ugh, I know I'm supposed to go first, but I don't know that they can. I really don't know that they can. Their defense has not been great. Their offense has been horrendous. I'm trying to find ways to say, okay, if they do X, Y, Z, they're going to be able to get it done. But I don't even think that the guys that they pay to coach this team have the answer.
I'll come up with some sort of technical reason.
Okay.
You stack 8-9 guys in the box, and seriously, you don't give up the big play through the pass, and you make sure that if the Cowboys offense beats you, it's because Dak Prescott is able to hit his checkdowns, make his second, third, fourth reads, and those guys make plays after the catch, because that is the only hope the 49ers have. Choke off Ezekiel Elliott, choke off the big plays in the passing game, and make the rookie beat you.
I completely agree with you. It's the only chance. Make the rookie make the decision. decisions and hope that he makes a couple of mistakes, because Ezekiel Elliott had
lots of them. Like, yes, we're talking 12 play drives.
Yes. Elliott had a breakout game last week, and this guy is a workhorse back. That's what he was at Ohio State. That's what he's going to be in the NFL. And with the 49ers, they just have to hope that defense steps up and is able to slow down the Cowboys. And then offensively, I don't know, a couple of busted coverages, a couple of broken plays, and maybe you can, you know, crap out a 17-14 win. But I certainly don't see the Niners winning this game, and I don't think any of us do.
How about the team on the other side of the bay? That's Oakland Raiders' Sean Smith talking about Steve Smith of the Baltimore Ravens. Same kind of question. How will the Raiders beat Baltimore?
Get that offense back on track. They struggled a little bit against Tennessee. I mean, you know, you still get the win, but this is a team that should be putting up 28 points a game. The Ravens can't compete with that. So if you get your offense back on track on the road, this is a win.
The Ravens have won all three of their games. They've won all three of their games by a total of 13 points, and they've played the Bills, the Browns, and the Jags. Now, John Harbaugh is a hell of a coach, and the Ravens are playing at home. I understand that. I believe the Raiders are a better team than the Baltimore Ravens. I believe on a neutral site they would beat them at least 7, if not 8 out of 10. Keep that defense momentum going. Let David Amerson shut down Steve Smith Sr. as best he can and force the Ravens. It's almost like the opposite, Nate, of what we talked about with the Niners. Let the Ravens run the ball. Make their running game win the game for them and pull everybody back. Shut down Flacco and those receivers and take your chances.
Oh, Dave, you basically said what I wanted to say.
That's right.
You've got to make sure that you take away Steve Smith Sr.
Yes.
And if you can do that, if Amerson could do his job and you can get some pressure, that defense gets some pressure on Joe Flacco. That's one of the things that they haven't done a great job of in the first 3 weeks, the Raiders defense, is getting a ton of pressure on the quarterbacks. I think if they can do that to Flacco, they're going to be in good shape.
No audio needed for this one, guys. Who are your players to watch this weekend in the NFL?
Well, I'll give you a couple. I think Russell Wilson in New York against the Jets, that's going to be a player to watch. He's a little bit more than just a little bit gimpy in that Jets defense, and Todd Bowles are going to be coming after him. Another quarterback or quarterbacks to watch, Jimmy Garoppolo or Jacoby Brissett in New England. Now, they're playing in New England. They should win the ball game, but Rex Ryan's coming after him. Whoever they put back there, Rexy is coming after him. It'll be interesting to see how those quarterbacks end up performing under a lot of pressure.
I'm going to go with Carson Palmer here because I don't feel like he had a great week. The Cardinals have not come out and started the season the way anyone expected them to. They face the Rams this weekend. This should be a much better matchup for them in terms of gaining some momentum and some confidence. But Carson Palmer really is the one guy that has to make things happen for this Cardinals team to live up to the potential.
I'm going with Khalil Mack because he needs to get off. He needs to do it quickly. Yeah, it's about time. He's got to have a big game. And we talked about David Amerson, Sean Smith, whoever it is, shutting down Steve Smith Sr. It starts with the pass rush, and it starts with Khalil Mack.
NFL and college football talk continues next. Chris Landry will join us right here on The Drive, Sports 1140 KHTK. Oh, a cult of personality on a Friday. A living color.
This song is meant to be played loud.
We had Chris Landry ready to go here. And, you know, when I say something about somebody, I can't say it to Chris's face, but I feel like I can say it to his ear. All right. Now, I'm telling you guys something, whether you know it or not. Chris Landry, not a good businessman. Not a good businessman. I'm going to tell you why. Listen, right now at LandryFootball.com, they're offering a 50% discount for one year subscription. Okay, that's $49.99 if you just use the code seasonal. That's all you got to do. And $25 of that is going to flood relief victims in the Baton Rouge area. Okay, so that's one thing they're doing at LandryFootball.com. The other 80% discount for a one-month trial, that's two freaking dollars.
Dave,
using the code two, T-W-O.
This is why they created things like ramen noodles.
Just saying. I don't know how he gets by. I don't know. He must
ramen
have
noodles.
Other jobs because he's got all this information that he gives us every Friday. And he's basically giving it away for free. And then on top of that, any money he is making, he's giving that to charity, which is phenomenal. So for whatever. I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to insult you, Chris. I'm just saying I care about you, and I look at these deals you're doing at LandryFootball.com. I don't know how you pay your house payment.
Well, I've never been accused of being smart, so that's for sure. But it's seriously, we are, you know, it's an opportunity to get people to check us out. We think, you know, it's football season, and people are fantasy goers. They like to pick games on the weekends. They like to learn more about their teams on the college and pro level. And this is just a way to say, hey, come into the store, check us out, and we think you'll stay a while.
Well, I don't know why anybody would go there this week, at least for college football. I'm trying to think, are there any good games on Saturday? My goodness.
How about a great game tonight?
Oh, boy. Oh,
yeah, it'll be great. We've got, obviously, Stanford-Washington tonight.
Yep.
And we've got Louisville-Clemson feature matchup tomorrow night. And then, you know, really good game, Wisconsin-Michigan. So, yeah, there's some good matchups all around the board. And when we think there's a it's we're underplaying some other game, that ends up being the game of the weekend. You never know. That's great. What's the great thing about college football?
Well, that's what's crazy is some weekends you get stinkers. In this case, as you just mentioned, you have six of the top 10 teams playing each other. That's ridiculous. And let's start tonight. Jake Browning from Folsom High School here in the Sacramento area trying to show, and this is on the 25th anniversary of the national championship for the Washington Huskies, and our colleague Lincoln Kennedy will be on the sideline with a lot of ex-Huskies. They host Stanford, the number 7 team, coming in to face the number 10 team. How do you see this matchup?
Listen, I like Washington's chances. Stanford has been the bully of the Pac-12. You know, their ability to be able to win the line of scrimmage is what they do, and they don't make mistakes. Washington is a team that's built under Chris Peterson very much the same way, very smart, disciplined, mistake-free, and physical at the line of scrimmage. So they won't be pushed off the line of scrimmage. Stanford's got it. They're down a couple of corners, actually, three corners, and an outstanding receiver as well. Washington's getting them at the right time. Can they handle the big moment? We know that Stanford's been the program consistently over the past few years, the team to beat. Washington is certainly talented, young, you mentioned Jake, outstanding young talent. Love what Chris Peterson is doing. I think it's going to be a great matchup through the years. Is Washington capable of getting it done? It's home, and they've got Stanford, I think, a little bit vulnerable. I like their chances here.
All right, and then let's go to the matchup of the week. Number 3, Louisville, the team I'm very familiar with, unfortunately, going in and taking on Clemson here, a couple of undefeated teams, both regular and ACC records. This is a phenomenal game we will have here Saturday right here on Sports 1140 KHTK. How does this game go?
You know, it's a playoff type of feel to it, much like Stanford-Washington, in that this game is going to likely decide the Atlantic of the ACC and obviously put the front runner in that position to get into the national playoffs, provided they take care of business. I think Clemson's going to have to play better than they've played. They've improved the past couple of weeks, but offensively they're going to have to click. They're going to have to be on all cylinders. Deshaun Watson's going to have to make some big plays in the passing game for him. I do like what Clemson has been able to do defensively. Brent Venables did a really good job against Georgia Tech's unique offense. This is going to be a different challenge, though, against a great quarterback who can run the football and break down your protections, break down your coverages, and break down your fronts. It's going to be quite a challenge. I do like Clemson at home, but they're going to have to play better than they played to this point. I think they're up to it, the experience. I think Louisville was really good. I think the game against Florida State just kind of got out of hand. I think that Florida State was a little dead leg. They got them misaligned, got them in that 3 games in 12 days, and it just got ugly, but I don't think it's necessarily an indication that Louisville is that much better than Florida State. And I think we'll find out if they can beat Clemson on the road, then there is no doubt that they will be a clear favorite to make the playoffs. But I kind of like Clemson in a close one.
Chris Landry with us. Last thing before we move on to the NFL. A lot of NFL questions for this weekend. But help me understand how Michigan is a 10.5-point favorite at the Big House versus Wisconsin.
You know, I think it's a lot, as you know, the betting lines are what the public perception is, not necessarily how much better a team is. Michigan is Michigan. Jim Harbaugh, a lot of attention. I don't think necessarily that they're 10 points better than Wisconsin. Wisconsin's very good, very underrated defensively. Alex Hornibrook has given them a dimension in the passing game that's allowed them to maybe be a little bit better. However, I do think Michigan's team is a little better at this point. They're at home, so I like them in a close one, but I agree with you. I don't think they're 10 points better. Wouldn't surprise me if Wisconsin won,
yep.
But I think Michigan probably wins it in a close one. This Michigan team's good, and they've gotten a lot better. They weren't all that impressive on tape against LSU early when they won that game, but they've gotten better and better. But they got Michigan, they got Ohio State coming up. We'll really find out how good Wisconsin is.
Chris, we were talking earlier about our players to watch this week, and I talked about Carson Palmer because of what's going on with Arizona not living up to expectations. But someone else that I think we've really got to keep an eye on this week is Brock Osweiler, because after just thoroughly getting, you know, beat 27-0 by the Patriots last week, it sounds like Bill O'Brien is now going to start taking over the play calling. What's going on there?
Well, a lot of frustration. The play up front hasn't been good. Obviously, Brock has not played well. He's got a case of a pocket lock, and he was absolutely terrorized by the Patriots' defense. And that was an embarrassing moment for Bill O'Brien. You know, he's the guy heading the team, but he's also the guy that's got his fingerprint on the offense, and this is the quarterback he tagged. And he goes in, as you mentioned, got beat down by New England against, Jacoby Brissett and a very swarming defense. I think this is a get-well game. I think you're right on it. I mean, Kate, I think it's – look, I mean, this. If you're going to be a player in this, you know, in this division, you got to beat Tennessee at home. If you don't, then it's going to be a real negative sign. A lot of time to prepare and to make these changes. I think it is a get-well game.
Chris Landry with us on KHTK. Chris, how good is that Texans defense without J.J. Watt, though?
Oh, I still think they're talented, but that's a huge loss. I mean, I don't need to tell you guys how great a player he is and what he means in terms of versatility over that front. But it's still a pretty good unit. They're still pretty physical. You know, Jadeveon Clowney has actually played fairly well. He just needs to be more consistent. He's got to stay healthy in his own right. It's not a great defense, but it is good and certainly capable of being a better defense if they can get some help from their offense. The other thing I think to look out for Houston is on the offensive side of the ball, in conjunction with the defense, they're running the football with Lamar Miller, and they want to be able to be a better running team. But that offensive line has got to play better, and I think that's going to be the key.
Chris Landry joining us. You can go to KHTK.com, click on Ask the Scout, and submit questions for Chris Landry each week, and we'll ask Chris on the air every single Friday, like this one from Nate L., not Nate G., not Nate Goodyear, Nate L. in Sacramento. Chris, Nate wants to know if there's any chance the Niners will be forced to put Kaepernick in the game against Dallas this Sunday.
Well, I think it's coming. I think we're going to see it. I just don't know quite. It's one thing to be cleared medically if you feel a guy is ready or not based upon how explosive he looks in practice, how sharp he is. That's a different thing. I think if the quarterback play does not get better, then it's going to happen. I think we're going to see Colin. And I wouldn't rule it out. And I know we're not talking about an injury situation, but, yeah, I could see it. Probably not. I think they'll probably have a week where they feel like he's ready to go. But I wouldn't rule it out at all if the play continues to regress.
Chris, I want to follow up on that Kaepernick question, because when Chip Kelly came out and said that he's not 100% healthy, how much of that do you think is actually legitimate, and how much is an excuse for why he hasn't gone there yet?
I think a lot of what happens is when you're cleared medically and you're all right, you're ready to go, it doesn't mean you're as explosive or as ready or as sharp. I mean, I think we're seeing that with Jamaal Charles in Kansas City as well. You know, he's been cleared, but it's been 2 weeks. You know, he's not quite ready, not the same explosive type of guy. So I do think it is you're protecting the player to some degree. You don't want to put him in unless you think he's ready. In other words, the process goes, the medical staff says, all right, the guy's ready to go. It's up to the coach to watch the guy perform and say, yeah, okay, he looks ready from a football standpoint. Now you go in. But there is sometimes a gap there where, hey, he may be cleared medically, but he's not the same. And I think that's where we are with him. And I don't think it's because they're happy with their quarterback play. I think they need to make sure that they don't put him in too soon and cause further problems for him, you know, medically.
Chris, I'm going to ask you about the Raiders. David Amerson is graded out as one of the best corners in the league so far. I mean, depending on who you look at, he's right up there. And I'm wondering how much of that has to do with him just making a leap in his career and how much of it is, say, the Raiders' scheme. What's led to David Amerson's early season success?
Well, David's never been what you call the most explosive, you know, great burst type corner. But, boy, he has the ability to play physical on the ball. He's got really good instincts, and they're doing a good job with him. I think that, you know, if the pass rush will become more consistent, they do a better job of getting people in third and longs, I think he'll even his play will be even better. I think he's a really good physical guy, struggled a little bit early in the league, but once he's been able to learn how to stay on top of routes, I think he's outstanding. The biggest thing is they do a good job with him, yes, but he's a good on-the-ball defender, and I think when you play him in some zone looks, he can be really effective.
Chris Landry joining us on KHTK. Talk about Baltimore here. Now, the Raiders going into Baltimore. I don't want to take anything away from John Harbaugh. We were talking earlier. Phenomenal coach, and he gets the most out of his teams more often than not. But is there a chance they're a little bit of a paper tiger? And how do you think these two overall match up on paper?
Oh, I think, you know, I know where you're going with it, and you're right. You just play whoever you play, and there's some teams that are weaker in the league, but there's no gimmies and no layups in this league. But I don't think they've played as good as their record would indicate. But let me just say this, because I've seen this before. Oftentimes when you play a softer schedule and you gain confidence, you become a dangerous team. In other words, you may not look as good on tape, but you're getting more confident. And then when you start playing better teams, you start to see a little bit more. Case in point, Philadelphia. Well, again, I got to play Pittsburgh this week. Boom, all of a sudden, they look pretty good against them. I'm with you. I don't look at Baltimore as a real deep threat in the AFC. I think they're young. They're not dominant on defense. This is going to be a challenge, certainly, against the Raiders, and I do think the Raiders match up pretty well. This is a game in which the Raiders, to me, they've got to start getting a little bit more consistency up front defensively. Offensively, certainly they look like a tough matchup for the Ravens to me.
Just a reminder for our listeners, you can go to khtk.com and click on Ask the Scout to submit your questions for Chris Landry, and we'll ask Chris on the air next week. We've got one more from you, Chris, from John F. in Roseville. This goes back to college football. Given Stanford's weak schedule in the Pac-12, do they have a chance to finish in the top four?
Absolutely. They went out. There's no doubt they'll be in the playoffs. It's just if you lose a game, who do you lose to? Those things are going to factor in. And then who else is available? I mean, I think that you're looking at I think the Pac-12 is a pretty solid league, top to bottom, and while they may be devoid of that great team, and I don't think it's the great Stanford team, they run the table, they're going to be in the playoffs.
You know, let me follow up on you then real quick. What about Washington? Washington, that seems to be a little bit more of a road to hoe for them.
It is, but if they run the table, if they're the team that runs the table, I think an unbeaten Pac-12 team is I can't see them getting left out. Now, let's see. If Ohio State runs the table, Alabama runs the table, Louisville, Clemson runs the table. I think the Pac-12 team, the Big 12 is going to be on the outside looking in right now, folks. They don't have a great team. Oklahoma's basically out of it. I don't see Baylor being that team. So I think the path is there. Now, the issue would be is, if you have a close game between a Louisville and a Clemson, close game between an Alabama and a Tennessee, and all of a sudden, then maybe you've got a chance for that second team from the ACC, the second team from the SEC. I don't think Michigan is that caliber, but let's just say they're really close. The second team, they're the second team in the Big Ten, let's say. Then you could see maybe it knocking a Pac-12 team out if they have one loss. But an unbeaten Pac-12 team, Stanford, Washington runs the table, I don't see them getting left out.
Chris, I want to ask you one more question about the NFL before we let you go.
Sure.
A lot of games, obviously, on the schedule this weekend. One I've actually got my eye on that I'm curious about is the Patriots and the Bills, because, you know, this obviously is the last game that the Patriots will have without Tom Brady, and the Bills have not looked that bad. So I'm curious, do you think the Patriots are going to win out without Tom Brady starting for them?
It's starting to look like it. You know, I didn't think they'd beat Arizona week one, and it was close, and Arizona had a great chance to win it. I'm through counting out Bill Belichick. I've coached with the guy, and I'm obviously not very smart, because I still look at the opportunities to say, hey, you know, this is where you can get them, and you know Buffalo needs a win, coaching for their jobs. All of those things are true. But, you know, New England is really good defensively. They find a way to get the ball out quickly, whoever's playing quarterback, and they get the ball in the hands of their playmakers. So I would favor New England at home. But can you imagine now, as they head towards Tom Brady coming back, they're either going to be 3-1 or 4-0, and God help the rest of the AFC, because Tom Brady is going to be, he's going to be hyping mad, quietly mad, trying to break every record that he's ever had in 12 games instead of 16, and I wouldn't put it past him.
You know, you kind of look at that matchup, too. The Bills, the Ryan brothers are supposed to be defensive geniuses or something along those lines, I guess. But before Rex Ryan came to town, Jim Schwartz had that unit as the number four defense in the league. Now he's gone to Philadelphia. Their defense has made a huge leap. So is Jim Schwartz just one of those guys that, you know, maybe just shouldn't be a head coach, but one of the best coordinators out there?
Well, he's a good young head coach. I've known Jim for a long time. We worked together. He's really, really bright. And I think if he gets another head coaching opportunity, I think he did have some success in Detroit. But be that as it may, he's an outstanding defensive coordinator, and he's got that defense playing well. What he does a really good job of getting good base pressure and plays maximum guys in coverage. He doesn't like to blitz a lot. So that's the real key. And, you know, he runs a true wide tackle, you know, wide nine defense, where those defensive ends are played in a wide nine technique, getting straight up feel. And they do a good job of spreading out the offensive line. And what that does is create gaps between the center and the guards to penetrate through. And they have done a really good job with it. And that's a very good point you make about, hey, this Philadelphia team, the story's been Carson Wentz, but that defense has been a good sidebar as well.
You know, and it's interesting too, Chris, that you bring up that base pressure, because it seems like year in and year out, the best defenses, they cover that exactly, whether it's the Seahawks, they don't run a ton of blitzes. Yeah, I remember when the 49ers had Vic Fangio as their defensive coordinator, a lot of base pressure, and some of that is the talent, but why don't we see more of that?
Well, because if you can't generate pressure, you can't win. And if you can't generate base pressure, you have to blitz. If you allow particularly good quarterbacks time, they're going to carve you apart in this league with the way the rules favor the offenses. So it really comes down to this. You have to generate pressure. If you have to blitz, so be it. But imagine if you can get the same pressure with four or five-man pressures, and that gives you maximum guys in coverage. The more you blitz, less guys in coverage. So it is a give and take, but everybody wants to do it. It's just not many people have enough talent to be able to pull it off, to just get four and five man pressures and get home with that.
Chris, tell everybody where they can find you.
LandryFootball.com. We've got all the breakdowns of every one of these NFL games, all these college games in depth. So we break it down for you. Notebooks every day. A radio show every day that we put just based on football, taking you inside the game from inside the film room. Check us out there, and we'll think you'll love it.
Appreciate your time as always, Chris.
Y'all
have
a great weekend.
Thank you. Too.
Thanks so much.
Talk to you next week.
Bye bye.
That's Chris Landry. Before we go to break here, let's get you a Ryder Cup update. First round in progress. Yeah, exactly. Jordan Spieth, Patrick Reed are two up in their match. Mickelson, Fowler, they just went one up. We just saw Ricky Fowler chip a beautiful shot in from the fringe, like it was nothing. Let's see.
Gallery there is insane.
Oh, it is. Oh, it is. It's going to be so loud. Dustin Johnson and Matt Kuchar are just taking it. taking it. Four up right now through seven. The only match Europe has right now, Sergio Garcia and Martin Keimer are one up on Jimmy Walker and Zach Johnson. We've seen this before with the Americans.
Have those guys.
Yeah, exactly. They get off to a good start. You know it's all going to come down to Sunday. We will take a break. When we come back, former Baltimore receiver Qadri Ishmael, now broadcasting for them, he'll join us and break down the Raiders game from the Ravens side right here in your home of the Raiders, Sports 1140 KHDK.